Thank you. Now may we join the serenity prayer. God grant us the serenity to accept things I cannot change, courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And now I'd like to explain our anonymity tradition again for the benefit of those who may not know of it. There may be some who are not familiar with our tradition. If so, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker or member be identified by full name in published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential to our efforts to help other alcoholics, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. Now, I have one or two announcements here. One of them is that if you wish to have Bill autograph your book, if you will send it to us at the General Service Office in New York, it can be done then. As you can imagine, it's impossible for Bill to be autographing 10,000 books. So will you please do that? And another thing, all Alcophon meetings, except for the midnight one, will be held in the roof garden. We've heard this before, but it's repeating it. All Alcophon meetings, except for the midnight one, will be held in the roof garden. Take the main elevator. That's because the air conditioning broke down, as you remember, in the Ontario room, so we have to go up the roof garden to be a little cool. And again, photographs and tapes may be obtained in the Toronto room. And I have one more rather nice thing. There's someone here who's having their 30th regular birthday, not AA birthday, but just their 30th birthday, and it's Bob G. of Cobourg, Ontario. So happy birthday, Bob. And I think just in case Virginia P. was not in the room, I better just say this once again. Virginia P. of Dayton, Ohio, it's urgent that you go to the first aid room A. Thank you. And now I'm going to turn the meeting over to our chairman, Alan B. Alan has served in many capacities in AA since he first came into it, and in every service job that I can think of, he has also served as on our board of trustees, and he's chairing this meeting because he's now serving as our chairman for the International Committee at the General Service Office. And it's a great pleasure now to turn the meeting over to Alan B.
Thank you, Anne. Bonjour, mes amis. Buenos dias, mis compañeros alcoholicos. This is a neck tough one. Kerve Tuloa, to the last delegation from Finland. And hi, everybody. My name is Alan B., and I'm an alcoholic. I'm co-chairman of the International Committee, which was established in the fall of 1963 to meet a need for a wider sharing of AA experience in connection with the development and growth of AA groups outside the United States. We're a comparatively new committee. We function as a subcommittee of the Policy Committee, to which we report and which relays pertinent information to the Board of Trustees. It's the duty of the committee to review the progress, problems, and needs of overseas AA, its growth and experience, and to make recommendations as to the sharing of service experience with overseas countries. Now, the theme of this conference is responsibility. And I can assure you that the General Service Office recognizes that it has a responsibility to carry the AA message overseas and to render all possible service to AAs in other lands to assist them in carrying the message. The fact that half the members of our staff, Juanita, Eve, and Anne, have been engaged in providing and service to overseas groups during the past year should be an indication of how seriously we have shouldered this responsibility. However, by the same token, the International Committee believes that AAs in other lands should assume responsibility for their own service needs to the fullest degree possible. And I know that many of the countries represented here today are doing this, and believe me, I congratulate them. Now, early in its deliberations, the International Committee observed that in some countries where AA is new, some groups have experienced problems in determining their purpose and their membership and relations with others. And as a service to these groups, the committee accordingly prepared a 6-point statement. 6 points, all based on the traditions, provide that all members of a group are alcoholics. Strangely enough, we have found some countries where that has not been the case in the past. And that a group's primary purpose is to help alcoholics recover. Statement notes that AA groups are fully self-supporting, have no outside affiliations, no opinion on outside issues, and that a group's public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion, and that members need always maintain their personal anonymity at the public level of press, radio, television, and film. Now, this may seem like pretty elemental information to many of the people here today, but I can assure you that this statement has been used to good advantage in certain countries, particularly in Asia, where AA is only starting to grow. Also, early in its deliberations, the committee noted a direct relationship between the growth of AA in a country outside the United States and Canada and the degree to which AA literature was available in the language of that country. So recommendations regarding literature needs have therefore been an important function of the committee. And a policy for translation of literature in a country where AA is new and literature need is indicated has been consistently followed. For example, during the past year, a beginning was made in printing some literature in Italian, where AA is very new, and also in Portuguese for Brazil, where the need is very great. May interest you to know that at least some AA literature is now available in 18 languages other than English. You heard this morning of the, some of you at least did, of the wonderful job which has been done by the French Literature Council in the translation and printing of AA literature in the French language. Finland has done an outstanding job in this connection. Almost all the AA literature has been printed in Spanish by our own General Service Office. And we believe that its availability has been responsible for, to a considerable degree, for the sensational growth of AA in Latin America. But making the literature available is one thing, and getting it in the hands of those who need to read it is another. And this is where the AA groups in another country can begin to assume responsibility for their own service needs. In Colombia, South America, for example, a literature distribution center has been established in Medellin to handle all requests for AA literature from South America, Spanish translations. And another distribution center has been established in San Salvador to handle literature requests from Central America. And both centers are now active. And both are now also engaged in the publication of AA literature. They can publish this material at much lower prices than anything that we could approach in the United States. And while we think our Spanish translations are pretty good, there are some changes which can always be made to meet the needs of a particular country. Colombia, they've already published their own edition of the big book and a number of the pamphlets. And in San Salvador, the pamphlets are published one by one. I might say that the General Service Office has been happy to lend financial support to these efforts, financial support which we hope will be returned to us eventually. And this sort of offer is not limited to these two countries. Now, the next step that can be taken by countries eager to assume responsibility for their own service functions is the formation of a General Service Office and a General Service Board. It's always been the thinking of the General Service Board of Trustees in the United States that each country or closely related group of countries outside the North American continent should eventually develop its own service structure. When there are sufficient number of groups and members to make it possible and practical. And as a beginning, a service committee composed of AAs and known non-alcoholic friends of AA can be created. An office can then be set up to work under the supervision of the committee with perhaps one paid employee to start and handle inquiries in the distribution of literature. Then the next step would be the formation of a General Service Board of Trustees with committees responsible to it to work on public information, finances, literature, and other needs as they may arise. The board would oversee the operations of a General Service Office, act as custodians of the 12 steps and 12 traditions in the particular country, and the custodian of such physical assets as the board may acquire and oversee the distribution and publication of AA literature. And then finally would come the establishment of a General Service Conference where elected delegates from the various groups would meet annually with the board and its committee and personnel of the service office to establish a strong link between the service office, the board, and AA membership. And we have gone into much more detail as to the process by which overseas countries can assume their service responsibilities in a service structure statement, a copy of which is available to anyone who wants to write the General Service Office for it. Now, some of the countries, particularly where AA has been long established, already have their own boards of trustees, and some of them have service offices. But our General Service Office continues to receive a very great many inquiries from these countries when they encounter problems. And of course, we're happy to assume our responsibility in answering these inquiries and handling these problems. I think among the most precious possessions that we in AA share with one another are our service responsibilities. But we also believe that this is one of those cases where the gentle rain from heaven should fall on him who takes as well as on him who gives. And our own experience teaches us that AA is most healthy and most rewarding when groups are willing to shoulder their own service responsibilities to the extent that they are able to do so. Now, I think that all the members of the International Committee have found the work a fascinating assignment. To observe and perhaps to contribute something to the rapid recent growth of AA overseas has been a heartwarming, and I think I might even say a deeply spiritual experience. For many years, AA has been well established in such English-speaking countries as the British Isles and Australia and South Africa, in Scandinavian countries like Finland and Norway, and to a lesser degree in Belgium and the Netherlands. But only recently has AA taken root and grown in Latin America, in France and Germany, and in certain countries in Asia. And I'd like to cite some comparative figures from the World Directories for 1960 and 1965 to show you how dramatically AA has grown in some of these countries during the past 5 years. Well, the 1960 directory listed only one French-speaking group with three members in France. 1965 directory lists 10 groups with more than 200 members. There was only one German-speaking group in 1960, and 5 years later, we find 35 groups listed with 366 members, although many of these groups don't list the number of their members. In Colombia, South America, only two groups were listed in 1960. In 1965, 112 groups with 2,653 members are listed. Honduras had no groups in 1960. There are now 42 listed with a total membership of 1,176. Only one group in Guatemala 5 years ago. Now, 35 groups, 1,432 members. The 1960 directory listed 22 groups of 782 members in El Salvador, but now listed are 126 groups with 4,514 members. And El Salvador is the smallest of the Central American countries. I think it has a population of a little over 2 million. But our directory figures aren't accurate. We list in 65 126 groups in Salvador. I was there a year ago, and at that time, 162 groups were listed with the El Salvador Intergroup. And they were claiming the total membership of 10,000 in that country, and I believe that figure is accurate. On an international basis, AA has grown from 16,000 members in 1960 to 36,846 in 65. In other words, our overseas membership has more than doubled over this 5-year period. Now we're going to hear from 8 speakers, including one distinguished non-alcoholic, who are nationals of as many countries and who will tell you the exciting story of the development of AA in their lands. And the first of these is a gentleman from Finland who was the first AA member in that country. And he is secretary of the central office in Finland. In Finland, AA members are known by other names. This fellow is known as Columbus, because he discovered AA. So I'll give you VACO for 10 minutes.
Yes, my name is VACO and my nickname is Columbus, as he said. And I am an alcoholic. Yeah, suomeksi sanottuna, että minä olen myös alkoholisti. Hi, Finnish word. I am here. Not alone. Here are many other members from Finland. May I ask them to hold their hands that you may see them. Nostakaa kätenne niin. Thanks for them. He has been in Finland 16 years, and we have today a little past 2,000 members, and they has did great work there. They are very good people. I like them very much.
No pictures, please.
Tuat AA is the same as AA literature. We have received all but we have in AA from the printed material and from the letters what the other members from the States and from other parts of the globe has sent us. We have really nearly all of the conference approved literature in the Finnish, and I have here 250 pieces. This is AA in Finnish, and at the end of this meeting, I will give you, if you are interested, some pieces, if you will, and without cost. I have always said that this AA is the best which never has exported from the States, and it is true, and it costs nothing to us. We have feeling that we are lot of thanks to pay you. And we can pay that what we have received from here to work in our own country and to work with your others over the world. And maybe this is long talk enough. Thank you.
Much, Veiko. I think now you'll understand why he has been such a kind greeter of people from the United States and Canada who have gone from Finland, several of whom I have heard from, and each one of them have mentioned Veiko. Now, our second speaker is a representative of one of the British Isles, and I'll give you Arch K from Scotland.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. That feels better. The initials AA to us indicate the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. They also serve to introduce me, Alcoholic Archie. I come from Scotland, a small country.
4.5 million inhabitants in Scotland, the chief exports have always been people to help to develop the more backward parts of the world. And whiskey to help to make up for the people. Some small compensation. Now, in Scotland, AA more or less started officially in 1947. Today, it's been a fairly slow process. Today, we have in 33 towns and cities, 53 groups with a good hardcore of 900 members over the whole country. A potential, actually, of about 100,000. But the Scots are a very proud people. We always have been, and I am no exception to the rule. I didn't like to be beaten by alcohol, and it took me a long, long time to admit defeat. Now, as I said, the greatest export we have really is whiskey, which in its own way has been of solace to many and a curse to a few more, including myself. I won't bore you with details of my case history. I started about when I was about 16, but in those days it didn't mean very much because I was very much of an athlete, and I was much more interested in keeping fit than in boozing. So that it was easy to take the odd drink and feel none the worse for it. But I liked the taste of whiskey. And for all that I know, I probably still do. I'm not intending to find out. This didn't worry me very much until the war broke out. When war broke out, everybody seemed to get drunk overnight. I went into the RAF, and the job that I was doing didn't give one a very great life expectancy. So that it was a good excuse to eat, drink, and be merry. The highlights of my war service were a rather nasty crash which I had, which cut down my interest on outside sports, and a marriage which sort of increased my interest in indoor sports. Who couldn't go down to the village and hit one of the children for fear that he might be hitting one of his own. Well, after the war, I became a very reluctant civilian. I didn't want to be a civilian. Frankly, I had too good a time, and it took me a long time to settle down. Housing was at a premium, and even when I did get a house, it was always just a house. It was never a home. Over the years, the inevitable pattern took place. I went in at the weekend to get clean laundry, and if my supper wasn't ready, there was a row. If it was ready, I didn't eat it. It never failed. It built up over the weekend, this pattern. But the more people said, "Look, man, for God's sake, give it up," the more I was determined to prove that I knew my own capacity. Yes, I knew my own capacity, but what I didn't know was the explanation for those increasing, what we call, blackouts. The things that people said I'd been doing and saying, of which I had no recollection. I was quite sure that there was a plot. Everybody was against me. And I very, very quickly developed into a lone drinker. I shut myself behind the wall, like so many others, and I refused to listen to anyone. But there came a day when I began to think that maybe they were right enough when they said that I was going daft, because I was beginning to think the same. So one night in rather maudlin state, I looked up the number of Alcoholics Anonymous in Edinburgh. My last geographical change had taken to me was about 20 miles of Edinburgh. There was a nearer group than that, but I wasn't going to go there in case somebody recognized me. I phoned up the AA group in Edinburgh, and a man named Charles answered. Now, while he was talking to me, there was a burst of laughter. And after it had stopped, he explained that this was some of the members who were sober and had come out from a meeting to have a drink of tea. Well, the next morning, I'd promised to go to AA that night. The next morning, I got into town and I went to my favourite bar and I thought, now what have you let yourself in for now? And I sat down and after a couple of halves of Glen Grant, I had it all figured out. I knew exactly what this AA in Edinburgh consisted of. When I picked up that phone, there'd been two old guys at the other end in a little room. When the phone rang, one picked it up and held me in conversation for a few minutes. Then, at a signal, his friend had switched on tape-recorded laughter. So I thought to myself, by God, you got away very easily that time. It took me another 4 months to reach AA. Another 4 months on this treadmill. And I finally went up to AA when I lost, as I thought, the respect of the only person who bothered to talk to me, my only daughter. But even then, I went up with a chip on my shoulder. I had a good few halves. And when I rang the bell, a wee fellow called John opened it, and a man called Charles, who later, it turned out, had been speaking to me 4 months earlier, came forward and asked if I had a drinking problem. I said, yes, but I'm not here to be preached at. Now, that was perfectly true. I'd given up religion more than 20 years earlier. The only spiritual existence I was interested in was in what came out of a bottle. Well, Charles said, come in. There's no one will preach at you. It's an illness you're suffering from. Now, this was the first time that anyone had ever used the word illness. So I sat down, and I listened, and I asked questions. And I didn't have to say, give me proof that this thing works. Because I could see that it worked. I could see it in the faces that were round about. I could sense it in what they were telling me. So I went back. In Edinburgh, we are very fortunate. We have meetings every night in the week, 3 supplementary meetings during the week. And I went back every night, and I asked questions, and I listened, and I realized that there was something here. The first thing I'd done when Charles handed me a serenity card was to stroke out the word God. I'll have the rest of it, I said. But as the months went on, I began to realize that I was sober. And I also realized that I hadn't stopped drinking when I went to AA. I was one of the very fortunate ones from whom the desire to drink had been taken away. Now, how had this been accomplished? Here was I, an atheist, no accepted religious belief, and yet, for some reason or another, the night I had gone to AA, it had been decided this much and no more. So, as the months went on, I realized that my conception of this outside intelligence, this creative force, was working for me just as much as it was working for those who did acknowledge a religion. And it was a very, very humbling experience. Here was I, the big shot, the guy who'd decried any form of religion, who'd always mocked at it for so long. Here was I, sober, and happy to be sober. And this continued. It didn't solve all my troubles, they didn't promise that they would. But by gosh, it gave them a different look entirely. And better still, my daughter understood what I was trying to do. And that in itself was something. Well, as I said, in Edinburgh we have meetings every night in the week. I began to travel to surrounding groups, and I discovered that no matter where one went, this same fellowship existed. I was no longer alone, and that meant a great deal. It's a wonderful thing to think that 30 years ago, Bill W. had this revelation about the illness of alcoholism. He was unselfish enough to pass it on to others, and in turn this knowledge reached me. I too am ready and willing to pass on to any suffering alcoholic anywhere this precious gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Thank you, Arch, for a very wonderful story. In Finland, they're great people for printing the literature. They have reams of it. And I've just been informed that there are 250 copies of This Is AA in Finnish here. It'll be placed on the table after the meeting, in case some of you would like to pick it up for souvenirs. Now, a year ago I attended a congreso, or national convention, in Bogota, Colombia, which was attended by about 1,000 other alcoholics, which isn't too bad for a country where AA was only 5 years old. And our next speaker is one of the people whom I met at that meeting. He was very kind to me, and I've become very fond of him. And I'm very proud to give you Jaime of Medellin, Colombia.
Buenas tardes. Hi, everybody. My name is Jaime, and I am an alcoholic. I would be a grateful to my honesty to try to individualize myself in such an important moment. And surrounded by so many dear brothers in Alcoholics Anonymous, being reality so different. We are all AA from Colombia, who are here, all unite as in a bunch of flowers which only exhales the perfume of comprehension, such a perfume scatters itself everywhere and mixes itself to form only one word, love. As I was chosen to speak to you, I greet you in the name of all of us and offer you the message of happiness from our distant but friendly country, where today we can see how the seed of AA grows. When everything that exists in me was good and sane, do it to the cradle that saw me when as I was born, surrounded by virtues and good manners, being educated as if I was going to play a very important position in a society that needed my presence the same as I could see without astonishing myself how a dark and progressing cloud of anxiety was approaching little by little. It caused me confusion and insecurity. This, it was destroying all those good and lovely feelings shaped inside my soul. The horizon beyond was fading faster before my eyes. That wide and beautiful horizon which once had already devised my ideals. The virtues that one day were in the sacred place of my soul were thrown away one after the other all at once by the well-known devilish sins or defects from character causing on me their known and deadly consequence. Not all had been lost yet. There was still a kind of fear, and I had the hope for a miracle to come at any moment. I deserved it. I was then when new and innocent victims were added to the Calvary. In a deceiving manner of responsibility, or perhaps in a cry full of anguish for my conscience, I got married in order to get the satisfaction of the continuity of my surname and the lengthening of my duty. I was completely in darkness and without faith in front of a revealed God, a God made to my own whims, a God I could place anywhere according to my selfish condition, the alcoholic God. I was then when I realized myself that God from my imagination was not the one to take me out of that condition, and I wish I was. And everything came down to pieces, the only solution for so much anguish could only be death, my own death. There was nothing left of what was once noble. I was spoiled by the anguish, desperation, and the lack of faith. I was completely defeated, and my future didn't show me anything but a dark grave, in which I was eager to be. I tried to suicide myself. Completely defeated, I walked into a center of Alcoholics Anonymous. I could observe and feel inside myself one neighbor really was. I also realized that the true ego I kept the foundation of all which once was called virtues. The light is ready now. 2 more minutes. Okay. I'm sorry. Well, I can tell to you the concerning of suffering women. The red mark of death are ordered at the hostile and cruel atmosphere are rising up in an unstable fence, which avoid us to deliver to such dear sister our message. They have to support without a little hope of salvation such a horrible illness. I beg to all of you to offer us you advice for their bad suffering Colombian women. Brothers in Aga, don't ever forget this. All that is temporary is ephemeral, and all that is spiritual is everlasting and supernatural. Thank you, amigos.
Jaime writes monthly letter for the Colombian groups, and it's one of the most marvelous things I've ever seen. The Christmas issue was profusely illustrated in color with little cherubs, and it was a wonderful looking thing. You still writing that? Well, we come now to one of the countries where AA's roots go deeper. England, and we have a man here who's eminently capable of giving you the story on England, because he's the secretary of the English General Service Board. and take great pleasure in giving you Bob L.
My name is Bob, and I am an alcoholic. I am extremely pleased to be in Toronto and make the acquaintance of so many new friends, for I consider everybody here is now a friend of mine. Some 30 years service in the Far East finished with me returning to England, knowing that I had a problem. But I didn't know what to do. The climax came one day when I picked up the telephone and rang up some great friends of mine and apologized for my behavior at their party the night before. They said there had been no party. They were kind enough to say they were sending round a doctor. About an hour later, the bell went at the door of my room. I was still in pajamas. I opened the door, and there was the doctor. I had in my hand a glass. It was of Epsom salts. But instead of using water, I had used gin. The doctor then asked me a question. He said, "How long does a bottle of gin last, Joe?" I said, "3 days," which was, of course, a lie. When he said, "Well, that's rather a lot," I sacked him. Being a stranger, really, in England, I had few friends. But I suddenly got the idea I will go to the town where I spent my boyhood. There I found a doctor who put me into a hospital. He was extremely kind, and when I was discharged, he said, "Now, if you can't stop drinking, go to a certain psychiatrist," and he gave me his name. I had to catch a train. What was more natural than to go and have a beer while I was waiting? I got back to London, and I got back to my room and got to bed, thanks to a taxi driver who was most helpful. The next morning, I remembered about the psychiatrist and gave me a ring. He gave me an appointment that afternoon. I went and saw him, and he said, "Well, I give you 6 months, or 6 foot under the ground, or a padded cell for life." He said, "I can't help you, but I do know some people who might be able to. They're called Alcoholics Anonymous." And by this time I was desperate. I wanted help. I wanted to stop drinking. So I got... He made an appointment for me. And I went to see him. I was met. I was had a long chat from somebody who obviously had had the same experience, had stopped drinking. He said, come to a meeting. I went to a meeting that night. But I was much cleverer than the people at the meeting. They had obviously found a perfect way of controlled drinking, but couldn't see it. Two days later, I was at the same door, and I was asking for help. I said, you were right and I was wrong. I also asked if there was any odd job like making tea or carrying parcels round which I could do. I'm still in that office because I found that for me it was a way of life and one which I must hand on to others in any way I could. That was about 12 years ago. Now, about in England itself, the British are a very stubborn people. They don't like new innovations. They chew over and try and find fault with anything. But we have now got to the extent of the British Medical Association agreeing that alcoholism is an illness. Our Ministry of Health have set up 15 special units in hospitals for the alcoholic. They can stay there, 3 months. And it's free. It's all on our national health scheme. In these units, they have a doctor, a trained doctor, and trained nurses. And it's for both men and for women. They have separate wards, naturally. We now find that we are getting about over 50% of our referrals through the medical profession. We tackle the clergy by writing to every bishop in Great Britain and Northern Ireland, saying what the fellowship did. 23% replied in their own handwriting, saying they would help in any way possible. So we are making a breakthrough. Our growth is steady, but not spectacular. There are some 300 groups in Great Britain and Ireland at the moment. And for women members, we reckon that we have 4 to 10 is the ratio of women to men. I have been asked by the General Service Board of Great Britain and Ireland to send fraternal greetings to everyone at this conference, and all wish they were here themselves. When I get back and report to them, they will wish even more so. Because it, to me, has been an experience which I will never forget. And I agree with Columbus, and I think all alcoholics in Great Britain and many non-alcoholics as well agree that the best thing that ever was exported from America was Alcoholics Anonymous.
Wonderful talk, Bob, and we all enjoyed it. I think this midway between the program is a good time to give you our non-alcoholic speaker, because we all know in whatever countries we live how grateful we are to our non-alcoholic friends. And this man comes from Christianstadt. He's a doctor. He's been a friend of AA and one of their stout allies since the beginning. And I give you Dr. Olson.
Dear friends, as the only non-alcoholic speaker on the panel here, I have to apologize for being here. As was said by the chairman, I am a non-alcoholic, and you wonder why are you here. And when I say my name is Oscar Olsen, my last name is the most common name in Norway. So I am in that way some kind of anonymous. I am not an alcoholic, but one of my patients once said to me, when did you stop drinking? Well, I said, I don't remember. It's far, far away. It was when I was a student. And he said, how can you speak about alcoholism like that? That's because I have been working with alcoholics for 16 years. The last 10 years I have been the head of a little clinic. And I have been working in close connection with the AA since the AA came to our place in the south of Norway, Kristiansand. So you understand why I am here. I am sorry that none of my friends in AA could be here. They would have liked to. I would have wished they could be here to have this tremendous experience. I am very grateful to be here to see you all. I am very grateful to have the opportunity to bring you the best greetings from your AA fellows in Norway and all the friends of AA over there. And to those of you who have read the book, AA Comes of Ages, maybe the story about the beginning of AA in Norway will be known. Bill calls the beginning a classic beginning. It started in the United States, in Greenwich in Connecticut. A Norwegian had recovered. He met AA. He hadn't had any contact with his home for 20 years. As soon as he felt sure, he sent a letter and told how things were now. He received a letter from Norway, from his family there, and told about his brother, who was in an awful state. And the Norwegian in Greenpeace and his wife, they decided to go to Norway. They sold their shop and buy a round trip to Oslo. When they came there, they found the brother as he had been described. The Norwegian from Greenwich tried to tell his brother what had happened to himself, and he translated the 12 steps. But the brother was obstinate. And so they said, the man from Greenwich and his wife, had come this long way to this. Of course, they were disappointed. They tried to get some doctors or clergymen to be interested in AA, but these men were polite, but not interested. And so they decided to go back again. But as they were making their plans for the return, the brother called them up and said, "Tell me a little more about the AAs and explain again the 12 steps for me." The man from Rinitz so did, and then it happened. The brother in Norway sobered up, and so it started. He was a typesetter, and he at once began to make some advertisements in his newspaper. A month went, nothing happened, and so there came a letter from a wife, a florist's wife, who asked help for his husband. The husband got the 12 steps, and he was changed. He was recovered. Then the first group was established, the first two men. And so it developed. When Bill and Lois, 3 years later, come to Norway, they could, when they came to the airport of Oslo, they could look upon a large delegation standing there to welcome them to Norway. And so the AA have expanded all over the country. There are now 82 groups, from Kristiansand in the south Norway to a far island. And I might tell you a little story which the secretary of the General Service Office told me. Some time ago they had a letter. It was bad written. They could hardly understand. They thought that the man who has written this letter had been drunk. They were astonished when they heard that the man was blind. He sat far, far up in the land of midnight sun in a little island. He and a fellow there had alcohol problems, and they have written to Oslo to get information to how they had to get along with their problems. This blind man did what he could to get help. Of course, the AA in Norway had its infancy problems, money problems, but I'm glad to say they have all the time, stuck to the principles of AA. In the beginning of the 50s, some groups went out to AA, and they would get money from the government and the municipal authorities to bring the message officially. That time is past. AA are safe and sound. That's what they can say. They said, "We are no rich groups, but we are sound groups." And I know that is true. May I say a few personal words? To me, AA has been a tremendous inspiration and have been of tremendous importance in my work with my alcoholics. I can tell my patients that what I can do to them is to bring them over the first difficulties. I cannot give them a recovery that can last. That can only a spiritual change. And when AA came to us, it gave us a completely new approach to an old, old problem. I hope that AA will proceed along the same lines as till now. And I hope also that we may say always that AA, we have an expression in Norway, I don't know if you have the same over here, but we say, as you try to translate it in English, we can't see the trees because of the forest. You know what I mean. I hope that AA always will see the trees the individual people that suffers, and not look to the mass. It is the individual we have to give the message. Good luck. God bless AA. God bless you all. And best greetings from Norway.
Understand why I said Dr. Olson was a good friend of the fellowship. So we'll go to another continent, Africa, and our next speaker will be Brian L. from South Africa. Brian?
My name is Brian. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. It gives me great pleasure to bring you greetings from AA in South Africa on this 30th anniversary, and I'd like to thank God who, through AA, has made this possible. We in South Africa are deeply grateful to Bill and all you fellow members of AA for sharing with us this wonderful way of life. We pray that AA throughout the world may continue to grow even faster than it has in the past. AA in South Africa has grown from the first member 20 years ago to nearly 200 groups today. Not only is AA spoken in the English language, but it is also spoken in Afrikaans, Zulu, and other Bantu languages. The big book of AA has also been translated into Afrikaans, and I have no doubt that in the very near future it will also be translated in Zulu. Pamphlets in Zulu and other Bantu dialects are available and being distributed in great numbers. We would like to thank GSO New York for all the literature and pamphlets which they continue to send us. We have a number of alcoholic clinics and rehabilitation centers throughout the country, and these enjoy the support of the government. The incidence of alcoholism in South Africa rates very high when compared with the rest of the world. I believe about third on the list. So it can be seen that much work still lies ahead of us. The South African National Council on Alcoholism is very active in educating the public, and branches of this organization are springing up around the country. The clergy, the medical profession, industry, and the courts all take an active part in our alcoholic program. With regard to my own story, it is just over 5 years ago that I thought I was the only person in the world with this problem. And it indeed gives me great pleasure to look around today and see that I was wrong. I am not alone. My drinking started in the same way so many thousands of others did. From the first drink, gradually progressing until finally, about 10 years later, I could not take any more. I was then introduced to AA by my sponsor. In the first few months in AA, I struggled to maintain sobriety until I was fortunate enough to obtain a number of tape recordings of the AA International Convention held at Long Beach in 1960. I shall forever be grateful to those tapes as they kept me going until a second member came along and we formed a group, which today numbers 7. I would like to point out that this is a very small village. Never then did I ever have the wildest dreams of attending this wonderful convention. And I shall take back never to be forgotten memories of meeting so many others like me. I shall also be taking back with me this wonderful verse, which is the theme of this convention, to which I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Thank you, and may God bless you all.
See, continents don't seem to make much difference in AA. It's the same all over. And our next speaker is from another continent, Australia. And I'll give you Jim W.
My name's Jim, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Bunbury, Western Australia. I travelled from Bunbury, Western Australia, on the west coast to the east coast in 1947, after it took my wife 6 months to organise my 12-step job. I was to be committed to a mental institution for keeps, and my doctor advised my wife to do the best she could to find a place for me to get help. After 6 months of trying and finding nowhere to get any help, she was advised by my doctor to write to the BMA of Melbourne and of Sydney. And the return letter showed the name of a doctor called Dr. Sylvester Minogue. And my doctor said, "That's the man you want." He had previously written in the medical journal a story of a fellowship of people called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the outcome of that was that I eventually, after having borrowed the money from the Returned Soldiers League, of which I was once president, we were broke, motherless, stony broke. I saw to that. I loaned the money to the wife, not to me. I made a mistake. On the conditions that she went with me and held the money. On arrival, I had a letter to Dr. Sylvester Minogue of Macquarie Street, Sydney. When I handed him the letter, I was still shaking and perspiring and had the inner trembles and trembles, or whatever you like to call them. I used to call them the Jim Jams and the Wiggy Wogs. I don't know what you call them. I was the most disappointed man in Sydney. I expected hospitalizations, needles, nurses and what have you. And he gave me 2 telephone numbers. One was XB7202. I've never forgotten it. It belonged to the name of the man who sponsored me, Clive Bayliss. I attended a meeting that night. You could count them on 2 hands, the people who were endeavouring to recover in 1947. Along the lines that had been suggested and laid down by the members of AA in America. I was the most miserable one there. I was astounded that these people who were not drinking were happy. How could you be happy without drinking? And yet I was impressed. I was impressed by the fact that these people were absolutely sure that this philosophy of the 12 steps of the recovery program of AA would work for anyone who wanted it to work. And that was the message that I travelled to Sydney for. The message of hope. I was, like many of you, the despised and the rejected of men. I was a man of sorrows and I was acquainted with grief. Similar to the man who, his father inspired this fellowship, God, as I understand him, gave us this fellowship of which I saw the vision of in Sydney in 1947. I've never had a drink since. The inspiration of what God could do with the weak things of the world to confound the strong, and the foolish things of the world to confound the mighty. What I read of what you'd done in America at that day through this program of yours convinced me this must be the inspiration of God. Because we were people who were rejected from all angles and everywhere. No hopers. That's what we call them, and they've called them forever in Australia, no hopers. Before I got there, they all went on the drunk at Christmas time. They argued the point about the program. They wanted to do all of the 12 steps to suit Australian conditions. And when they had a bust up, they broke into three groups, one in Manly, one in North Sydney, and one in Burwood. That was the makings of AA. Those who wanted it differently had it differently, and that's the way we have grown right throughout to this day. Men like Father Richard Murphy, Frank Sturge Hardy, Father Tom, who you heard, and others who were our good friends, as Bill calls them, who interpreted for us the spiritual concept of the program in Sydney at that time. And I don't know one of those early members who ever picked up a drink. Days went on, my wife returned to the family. We'd left three children in a home. I was father of nine children, and I did do other things. When I got back to Western Australia, a Sydney paper wrote about me, and they said, no wonder the poor fella drank. He had a wife and nine children. I could tell you something about that family today. Through this philosophy of the great abounding love that they have for their father this day, who for 18 years has been able to give them the advice that they've come to him for, only because of the greater power and what this fellowship has to give. But I want to go on to tell you how, in this vast continent of Australia, miles and miles of country in the west alone, the British Isles would fit into it 12 times, will give you some idea of the disability of the vast distances we have to cover. I've travelled on one weekend 1,800 miles to chair a meeting in Kalgoorlie. 120 in the shade. That'll try some of you out. And yet we've grown. with all the disabilities we've got. And we've grown not only because of the efforts that have been made by dedicated men and women in Australia. We've grown because of the love of alcoholics in Canada and America who have given us every help on every occasion on which we've asked for it. And in case I forget, I would bring you greetings from everyone in Australia. I have been asked to represent Australia at this convention. And if I could express the love to you that we have for you, for the goodness you've done to us, for the literature you put in hospitals and jails, for the help you've given us on our inquiries, or enquiries if you like. If you'd know how much your money has done for us in our part of the world, it would simply astound you, and we're grateful for it. In New South Wales, where I first caught up with it, there are now 200 groups of AA functioning in that state. Thousands of members. Victoria, similar. South Australia, about 45. Western Australia, about 50. Going from Darwin in the north to Albany in the south. Thousands of miles in between, and this message to be carried by dedicated men and women who wish to share this great thing that God has given us. Every state in the Commonwealth today have their own central office. People can ring up any hour of the day or night for help. We have reached the point now where not only have states been able to look after themselves to a large degree, but we have, since 1960, formed the Australian Service Conference. Delegates from each state are nominated, and they have become, in turn, the people to try and carry the message on an Australian-wide basis. Conventions have been held in every state, commencing with New South Wales, Victoria, Western Australia, South Australia and Queensland, and Tasmania will be the one to hold the convention next year. During this convention, these delegates get together to try and share their strength and their hope with one another, that they may solve the problem of 12-step work throughout the continent of Australia. And I can assure you these men have done a terrific amount of work and have made great sacrifices. Last year I was in this country, not Canada, but a USA, and I was telling GSO of the problem we had in trying to start a publishing company. I told the story to Eve one day. Eve passed it on to Alan Backman. The result of this was we were offered the rights to print the big book in Australia. We were offered the loan of the money to do it, and we would pay it back out of the profits after we had sold the book. Isn't that wonderful? Clap them up. Clap the DSO. That letter came to me from Alan Backman. I passed it on to our intergroup who covered the ground right throughout Australasia, and this matter did come up at the convention in Brisbane. They formed another committee to try and form a board of trustees in that area who will try to accept this responsibility that you have so wisely asked us to do. Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, places north of us, there are vast different distances in between. But I think the day will come, through the help that you've given us, when all these people we will be unified in the Southeast Asia area, and the barrier of languages which has been broken down at this convention will be carried on in that area too. The love that is expressed everywhere you go, no matter what part of the world, if you are an alcoholic, an AA group loves to have you. No matter what the language, no matter what the color, no matter what the creed. When I first caught up with AA, I was given by my sponsor the 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter to read. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am a sounding brass or a tingling cymbal. Love suffereth long and is kind. Love envieth not itself, is not puffed up. This is what this convention is, what I feel about it. This great love that is expressed by the getting together of thousands of alcoholics whose greatest delight is to share this great recovery program with those who are still suffering. Don't condemn conventions. Look upon them as the unifying of our 12-step effort, that we may at all times find ways of means to carry this message of hope and sobriety to those who are still sick. May God bless you and keep you, and we bring you everything you would wish for yourself from the greatest continent on earth, Australia. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim, for a most inspiring talk. You know, some of my friends in the United States, AA friends, sometimes ask me why we spend so much time on overseas groups, why three of our staff of six are working on this problem. Why don't we spend more time on the United States? Well, I've got an answer that satisfies me. There was a little group of people in Akron, Ohio, 30 years ago, that discovered a means of saving their lives, and their sanity at least. And you know, they might have said, boys, we've got something pretty good here. Let's keep it for ourselves. Well, thank God they didn't. Because I would bet that certainly half of this audience, had they done so, wouldn't be here today. You'd be dead. And the rest of you would be pretty damn sick. And when you hear someone like Jim speak, I think that's the answer of why we feel that we must devote a little time to overseas AA. Now, AA 4 or 5 years ago really didn't exist in France. They had an English-speaking group. And we'd wondered whether it ever would get going there or in Germany. And then something happened. And of the growth of AA in France, a truly remarkable story for the last few years, we can thank Our next speaker, Jean-Jacques. In France, they have a board of trustees composed of non-alcoholics and alcoholics, and Jean-Jacques is one of the alcoholic trustees. I'll let him tell you the story. Jean-Jacques.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jean-Jacques. I'm French. I'm an alcoholic. I'm 40. That's all I am for now. This workshop is supposed to be in English. I'll use my English, and you'll excuse me. When I met AA, that was a little more than 3 years ago, I knew that I accepted immediately that I was powerless over alcohol. But I didn't know at that time. I knew that I had lost control of my life, but I didn't know since how long I had lost control of my life. And I know now that I had lost control of my life since many years. In fact, I'm not going to tell you my whole story, but in fact, I began drinking rather early. I was 15 when I had my first drinks, and at 23, I see my first doctor. It was for something else. It was only because I was shaking one morning. And he looked at my hands, and my hands were shaking. And he looked at my tongue, and my tongue was shaking. So he asked me to take just half a liter of wine every day. I sure took it. And but I've never been able to drink normally. With alcohol, when I took alcohol, I've always worked like a pump. Each time I had a few drops, I just pumped, and as there was no mechanical way of stopping that pump, I stopped when I was not able to raise my glass anymore, and it has always been like that. I didn't always drink all the time, but each time I have touched the drink, it really has been the first drink. Around 25, I was engaged with a girl. She left me because of my drinking. Around 27, I was a salesman at that time. I sold a lot of things in my life. I'm still a salesman for two reasons. The first one is that I was always thinking that it was much better on the other side of the street than on the side I was. And the other reason is that for the reason I had to change also. At 27, I signed a check, and it wasn't quite my signature, it was a signature of somebody else. So I got into troubles, was very lucky because I always had, all along my life, I realize now, that higher power was with me. I wasn't religious, I've never been before AA, but I know that higher power was with me because I ought to have had much more trouble than I had. So I lost my job. I engaged in the army, I disengaged, I got married, that was another solution, and I was getting drunk every Sunday, every Saturday, every Sunday. And slowly I began losing things, losing jobs, losing my car. I lost my car, but I don't know how many times. I don't dare say 100 times, but I think it's true. And as all the cars in Paris at that time had about the same color and the same size, it was rather difficult to find it back. But then I lost also my jobs, and I began seeing doctors and psychiatrists and doctors, and taking Esperal, that's what you call antabuse, and stopping the Esperal, the antabuse, because I had an engagement for supper or for business lunch or for anything, and getting drunk again, and then beginning the antabuse the next morning because I was afraid, and getting up during the night to see if my car was in the garage, and my car wasn't in the garage, and though you know. And Then I was still working as a salesman. It's not too difficult because I hadn't got to go to the office every morning. But my weeks were getting shorter and shorter, and I had a disease at that time. I had what you call influenza. I was in my bed about 3 days or 4 days a week, and my girl, she was 7 at that time, she used to look through the door and say, "What has Daddy? He's got influenza once more." And I went on like that, still police stations, still doctors, still hospitals, and I spent, I think, the 2 or 3 last years, I spent about at least two nights a week in the police stations, and I had lots of what do you call that, what we call trou noir, black holes, right? And a lot of memory for 2 days, 3 days, and then when I were coming back, my wife, Jacqueline, who's there, used to sit on my bed and say, "Jean-Jacques, try to remember, what have you done with your bag, what have you done with your car, what have you done with..." And the telephone was ringing, my boss, and so I had lost nearly everything, my friends, since a long time. Then once I met a new doctor, and he was very nice, and he told me, "I've got a nice psychotherapy, it's a new kind of psychotherapy, but you've got to go first to the hospital." And so I tried once more. It was December 1961, and I tried hard, and I was glad to try that, and I went to the hospital. They put me asleep for about 8 days, and because I was rather nervous, and they put me into that cure, and I get out of that hospital, really a new man. In the hospital, I asked Jack and my wife to bring me some books, and I worked Spanish, English, German, I don't know what. I was a new man. I was wanted to go on again, and I went out of that hospital in January 62, and had my interviews every day and see the doctor every week. And after about 3 months, he told me, "I think that you're going to be cured." He didn't tell me that I was cured. I think that you're going to be cured. So that man never sees me again and never saw me again. I stopped interviews immediately, wait 5 or 4, 6 days, because I know I need that to drink after the interviews. And when coming back from my office one evening, I took a petit muscadet, a small glass of white wine. It was very rare that I drink small glasses, but I tried that one. Came back at home with my car, drove my car, and said to myself, I had the little glass inside, and nothing's happened. Nothing was happening. I was feeling quite normal, not more happy or not more sorry than usual. And came back home. I told Jacqueline I'm cured. Went down to the cellar, take a bottle of vin rosé, open it, drink half of it, put the cork on it, and I was quite proud of me to put the cork on the bottle, and put that back to the ice box. And I think I spent about 2 or 3 days like that. After that, I wasn't able to go anymore to the office very quickly. My office was 15 kilometers from home, and it wasn't possible to get there with all the bistro I had on the road. I stopped washing, I stopped shaving, I stopped coming back home. Jacqueline left with the children. I spent about 3 months like that, until the 24th of June 1962. That day I had been drinking for a long time. I was sleeping when I came back to home. I was sleeping on the floor. I always felt like a dying dog, but a very thirsty one, you know. So I was sleeping in corners, and I tried to commit suicide that night. It wasn't a movie picture suicide. I had a bottle of pills, sleeping pills, and I opened the gas and finished a bottle of whiskey and get to sleep. And I don't know how long it took to me not to die, but after maybe 5 minutes, maybe 5 hours, I don't know, I got awake and say, "What an awful smell in here." And I opened the window and went out again. And I was going to the south of France. I had this, at that time, my car and my driving license together. It was rather rare. And The south of France took me at about 3 kilometers from my home, and I had a few white wines before I said the bistro. I had been working all the night and I was very tired, and I had to take a glass to pick me up. And then I came back home and went to see my neighbors. My neighbors were American. I rang their door. She opened the door. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning. I was very nervous. I wasn't safe. I was crying, and I told her, "I'm finished. I'm finished. I've tried anything. I can't do anything else." And she went to fetch her husband, and he came. He told me, "You're not finished. You're just ill. I have friends in the States like you. They just went to Alcoholic Anonymous, and I didn't know Alcoholic Anonymous. I never read anything on Alcoholic Anonymous before that day. I thought I never heard of it, but my answer was Église Américaine, that's American Church in Paris, where we had at that time a very small group. We phoned there, my sponsor came, his name is Olivier, it's a taxi driver, a very nice chap, it's one of my best friends, and Olivier told me, "I'm Olivier, I'm an alcoholic." Then we spent the whole day together. I wasn't able to stay alone at the time, and he took me to my first meeting on the evening, and here I am now. And we have now in France, we were about 15 at that time. We are still very young in AA because our group is 5 years old, our friend group, because we had an American group before that helped a lot the friend group to get on. 5 years ago, French paper writer Joseph Cassel made a reportage in the States, and that the small American group got about 200 letters, answered these letters, and out of that we had about three alcoholics. And now we have 3 groups in Paris. We're pretty young. We're going slowly, I think, but we're doing work, all of us. But I think we can't go too fast. We have to get the house ready, and I think the house is ready now. We try to stick to the traditions. We try to stick to this problem, because I think I can't live out of that problem. I have to try to stay in that problem, because I just try. I can't say I'm in the problem. But... And we have now a few groups. We have one meeting every night in Paris. We have about 500 registered alcoholics in Paris. That means people coming to the meetings. We have now a few groups outside Paris in the big towns. We have lots of loners around. We write a lot, all of us. And each of us have about 3 or 4 writing brothers, if I can say. For instance, at Easter, I went to the south to Grenoble, and I brought back from there one of our friends, our writing friends, living far up in the mountains. He came to Paris for a few days, and he's trying now to have a group in Grenoble there. So I think the only thing I can tell you to finish is that we are very grateful, all of us in Paris, to you, American people, not because you're American, because also you're alcoholics, because with Bill at the beginning, with all of you, by the grace of God, we stay sober, and I hope we'll do a lot of work, because there's a lot to do. Thank you.
I don't think I've ever heard 8 finer AA stories. And I include yours, Dr. Olson, as an AA story. And, I can claim no credit for this. Anne and Eve and Juanita, the 3 secretaries at the office who handle overseas work, picked the speakers, and I didn't have anything to do with it. I have wondered a great deal in recent months as I've seen the magnificent growth of AA overseas as to what made it possible, because for so long we didn't believe that there'd be any AA, and France or Germany or Latin America. And I think I know the answer now. And I think I can find the answer in my own experience. When I came into AA myself a little over 18 years ago, I was a lonely, sick, pretty desperate alcoholic. And it was the AA group that shared their experience and their hope with me. But at the same time, they gave me something else. Something that, to me as a newcomer, was very, very important. They gave me their love. Now, this isn't the kind of love that has anything to do with sex. I don't think there's any word in the English language that precisely defines this emotion that one alcoholic feels for another. It's the kind of an outpouring, a spontaneous process of giving for its own sake without any hope or expectation of praise or reward or anything back from the one on whom the love is bestowed. I don't think it's based primarily on a sense of duty or obligation. I think it's a spiritual quality which is passed down to us by older members in AA and which we can keep only by giving it away to others. It's as though the old obsessions and compulsions to drink become replaced with a new obsession to love or care about our fellow alcoholics in this very special way. And I think that is universal. And I think after listening to the speakers today, you may agree with me that that is a universal quality of mankind, or at least the alcoholic part of us, to care about one another. And I think that's the reason why AA is growing so fast in these other lands. Now, unfortunately, we couldn't hear from representatives of all the countries here today. And I think that a good way to close this meeting would be for me to read a list of them. There are quite a few. And I'll ask you to stand as your country is called. Australia. Bahamas. Brazil, where they now have between 2,000 and 3,000 members. Colombia. Canal Zone. Canal Zone. Not here. El Salvador. We have one person here from El Salvador. England. Finland. Some of you went back to raise your hands. France. Do we have anybody here from Guam? Honduras. Iceland. Ireland. Somebody here from... Mexico. Peru. Peru. Had one here earlier. And Scotland. South Africa. Switzerland? We have one here. Not here in the hall. Trinidad. The Virgin Islands. And Zambia, Africa. Well, some of these people evidently are at other meetings, but all of these countries were represented here today, and I think that's a pretty good indication that AA has become truly international. And I want to thank the speakers from the bottom of my heart, and may God hold you all safe in the hollow of his hand. Will you join me, those of you who wish to, in closing this meeting in the usual manner? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today this bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.